before I start, actually, I just wanted to mention something that is, in a certain sense, background to what we're going to be finishing up today, and also was reflects a little bit of the difficulty of just moving on as though nothing has happened over the past week. It's very, very hard for me to do that. Just as a community, we've been affected so greatly, both in the close-to-home sense and in the broader sense, obviously. It brought to my mind something Rav Soloveitchik had emphasized when he was confronted with issues of significant tragedy to the tzibur. So he always would react by emphasizing the halachic reaction to episodes of pain and suffering. And what he would say is that, and I think he even wrote this up in an essay somewhere, that halacha always expresses itself on two planes. Halacha always reacts and expresses the human condition from two reference frames. He used very fancy philosophical terminology for this. One he called the topical frame, one he called the thematic frame. But when he explains it, you might not get a sense. If you're not really into philosophy, you might not understand what he's talking about. But he explains it through Chazal in a very beautiful way. And he said the following. He said that when it comes to one aspect of halacha, it's the nasa v'nishma approach, which he explained meant that the nasa v'nishma, as much as we know that it emphasizes the Seder, right? The greatness of Nasa v'Nishma is it was the Sod Malachim, that the blind obedience to Hashem, that's a real Naila for whatever reason. And that's one element of Nasa v'Nishma. But the less publicized element of Nasa v'Nishma is that it's really a mandate towards Nasa, which is Maisa, obviously, and Nishma, which is understanding, that there's an absolute chiyuv upon a person from one aspect of the halachic expression, to do and be obedient, completely obedient to halacha, and nishma also understand to the fullest of their abilities the background and the derivation of the halacha. It's the side of halacha that expresses itself or controls or demands the will and the mind of a person. It's an intellectual experience. It's an experience of obedience and understanding and intellect. He said, that's just one facet of halacha. He said, then there's another one that uses a completely different pasuk. It's not nasa v'nishma, but it's sort of built on a pasuk in Tehillim, which is a very profound idea. It says in Tehillim, it's a parak lamed aleph, it says, Utamu ure'u ki tov Hashem. What does that mean? Utamu ure'u. Ta'amu. What is ta'am? So he says that all the translations that he's ever seen, and I look myself just to see if contemporary translations do the same thing, he said, destroy the meaning of this pasuk. Right? Because all contemporary translations of that pasuk say, think it over, consider, tamu uru'u, think it over, and then you'll see that Hashem is good. He said, that's not at all what the pasuk's about. It really should be translated far more literally. Tamu means taste. Taste and behold. Behold, experience. Experience Hashem, and you'll see that it's good. And he said, this is the platform for the real other very significant expression of the halacha. Not a mind intellectual one, not one that's going to make an ordered system of Shulchan Aruch and all that, but it's a pure experience expression. It's an experience of the values of Torah. So he illustrated that with Hilchos Shabbos, which is what's going to be relevant to us. I'm going to get back to that in a second, but what he was really driving at with this entire discussion was a response to suffering. He said the nasa v'nishma type of expression is one that is geared and focused on by people who are really concentrating on olam hazeh with their five senses and the reality of life and the reactions to things that are around us from a fully this worldly perspective. It says the other one, the experienced one, is not bound at all by Olam Hazeh. It's not a halachic man type situation, but it's one that goes well beyond. It's very bold, and that's the expressions he used, bold and courageous, because it moves well beyond approach. He says he points to Gemara and Kiddushin on Amatas on the Beis and Mem on the Beis. You see all these Gemaras over there where they talk about Tzchai Ba'onish, and the whole emphasis, you know, this life is really nothing, and it's real, nothing is bad, nothing's really bad. It denies evil completely, because really there's a perspective that's much greater than what we're limited to in this world, right? It's like the one of the Maspedim that we heard said, you know, Nistaros Hashem Elokeinu, Nivlos Lanu Levaneinu. So this is like sort of that Nistar approach. This is all Nistar. One day we'll have the perspective, we'll understand. He says that's really to a large degree the approach of Chazal. You see it over and over again, right? The famous story in Gemara Kedushin about the father who sends his son up for the Kan Sipur to do the mitzvah. The two mitzvahs that have in it are Arichas Yamim and Tov, and right away the guy dies. How could that be? What's the Gemara's response? The Gemara's response is because it's not Aruch Yamim here, it's Olam Haba, and it's all about that. Then he says, the Rav said, but we always address every issue from both planes. You can't limit it to that plane. You have to address it also from the other plane. You have to address it from the here and now, nasiv and nishma, mind and will, intellectual. What do? We deny evil? Is that what we really do? It really doesn't exist. We say, you know, that's the way we live our lives in such a plane. He says, no, you have that knowledge, right? You, as the person who gave the hesped put it, right? Not quoting Rav Soloveitchik, obviously. You're certainly aware of the fact that there is this mahalach, which is a very strong push in Chazal, but at the same time, you must emphasize the fact that we, from the other plane, absolutely don't deny evil. We have to recognize evil, and for what it is. It is evil. Amalek is evil, right? We have to be, should be one of passion, absolute passion. Never yeyush. But the purpose of these events, for the real person, the real halachic person who's living with his five senses in this life, is not to waste, the way he put it, he actually made this comment, he said, don't waste your passional experiences. Use them. They're there to drive you. And Kedarko B'Kodesh, what he used, I was very impressed, as his paradigm example of this, was Verapa Yerapa. He throws it in and he says, that's what Verapa Yerapa is. He says, that's what it means to go out and fight disease. What is it? Disease is Xeris Amalek. You're going to sit, you're going to take it. That's what it is. You're supposed to just be Miyash. You know, Hashem is Xeros. He says, no, the point is to arouse in us passion, passional reaction. And every time there's a tragedy, he says, that's what there's a chiyuv on a person to do, is let it get the emotions churning, but not in a form of just apathetic yeush and giving in, but rather let it drive you towards pushing to do something about it. You know, you're confronted with a horrible illness, you're confronted with horrible events, see what you could do inside yourself, let it just spurn you towards greater action. When he talked about Hilchos Shabbos, and he wanted to give an example of really a manifestation of his whole philosophy on these two facets of expression of the halacha, so he got also to something just coincidentally that relates to what we're going to be doing right now. So flip over to the top of Hilchos Shabbos, right? There's Zachar's Yom HaShabbos in the Kasha, right? Sheishis Yami Taiva Lusis Komalacha, Mishir Shabbos Lashem Alkecha, Losase Komalacha. That's one element of Shemir Shabbos. What is that? Zachar is Yom HaShabbos Tekancho. That's a mandate to us to be Mekadosh the Shabbos. How do we do it? We shomer, we're abstaining from malacha, right? We don't do 39 acts of malacha. That's one way we are Mekadosh the Shabbos. And we're going to make Kiddush. Of course, Zachar is Yom HaShabbos, that's all about Kiddush. We do mitzvah saseh. That's the Nasav Nishma element of Shabbos. But then he said, there's other pasuk. There's a pasuk in Parshas Bereishis that says, so that Shabbos intrinsically has a bracha and kedusha granted by Hashem, kavua v'kaimu, nothing to do with us, right? We're not being mekadesh Shabbos on that element. We're experiencing the kedusha of Shabbos, right? We will get in there and experience it. How do we do that? He says it involves a shmir Shabbos that has nothing to do with 39 malachos, has nothing to do with even isur derabanan per se, but it has to do with a shmira of the shvisa and menucha of Shabbos. He didn't quote this, but what it reminds me of, the famous Beis HaLevi, right? Or not the Beis HaLevi, it's the Griz. In the Beis HaLevi, Perush on Chumash, right? So in the back, I don't know if you guys have this, now they have newer, nicer versions of this, Beis HaLevi on Chumash. But in the old version of the Beis HaLevi on Chumash, in the back is the Griz, the stencil, little vortla from the Griz, in the back of that sefer. So in it, he talks about Tefillah Shachris, which says, "Blo nasat Hashem lakin ha'gayei haratzos, blo inchato makin l'avdei psilim, v'gam b'nuchasol lo not given over to the non-Jews." None of it was given over. V'gam b'nuchasol lo yishkin erelim. And also, menucha they didn't get. Isn't the halacha what the menucha is? So the basically the Riz says, no, not at all. There's again these two things. There's the dinim and the isurim, the halachas of Shabbos. That's one thing, but there's menucha, which is a completely separate, independent entity, right? It's like that Rashi. Right, what was chaser on Shabbos? Menucha, ba Shabbos, ba menucha. There was a bria, a separate bria of kedusha and menucha. And what we'll see in a moment is that this sounds like drushy stuff, but Rishonim and Achronim bring it in into manifest halacha, which we're going to see in a moment. It's very important. It's something that I'm bringing up and going through all these subtle, little elaborate introduction, because it really occurs to me that it's something that we who are going to be involved in skirting Yisuri Shabbos all the time, hopefully not, but if we have to and if we are, we have to be the most conscious of this concern. It's something that's, for example, which we never got to, Rav Schechter's Mahalach on Shomer Shabbos residencies. One of the big elements that he emphasized over and over again was this. Even if you can manage to squeeze by and do this and that, he said you still might lose the sense of menucha, of shvisa, that you know permeate Shabbos, that should be something that a person's ever mindful of. So we'll see today, in finishing up this section, how that was a concern of many, many. Last week's handout, basically, we were talking about telephones, and what we rushed through at the end is worth, again, just reiterating, is the hierarchy of phones. When it comes to phones, the bottom line is that it's one of those categories of where you should be mindful of the need for shinoi and ayidei nochri if possible. It's not one where we're worried that people are going to get the wrong idea about not being mechal Shabbos when necessary. Usually you're away from the sakana itself and you're dealing with the phone or the beeper and all those type of things. Obviously, if it's a mamish, an emergency, everything that we talk about today goes out the window. If you have an emergency and you need to make a phone call, just make the phone call and do whatever you can as quickly as possible. Don't be concerned with any of the little things. But in the majority of cases, that's not the way it is. You're on call, you get a page, right? And again, we talked about the beeper, and the best way to have the beeper is giving you as much information as possible so that you can avoid unnecessary calls if possible. You get your page and you got a call, so you're going to do it, especially you have so much time ahead of time to prepare this. This isn't one you're going to just be confronted with lack of preparation unless you don't prepare. But being as we're so in advance of that situation right now, I would go out and look for the telephone now. Get yourself a phone that's the least objectionable. The least objectionable is usually the least fancy. So probably the cheapest also. That's good. It used to be, and what I always had classically, was the rotary phone. The rotary phone has a lot of advantages. Again, we said Rosh Shlomo Zalman sees it as grumma altogether. There's not even arguably any surim going on in the very lightest derabanans that are going on if you use a rotary phone, right? Especially nowadays, since we don't have that system where they have the light automatically going. The problem with the rotary phone is that it's pulse. Pulse dialing is worse than tone dialing, right? Because pulse dialing, every click-click, every time it's registering a pulse, is another connection that's being made. It's another act of molid if you hold from that sheet by electricity. Whereas with tone, you avoid it. So the best phone would be a non-lit, no lights, no writing, straightforward, not so easy to get, but I have one, touch-tone phone. That would be the ideal phone. The next would probably be the rotary. Right, especially if you're holding like Rosh Shlomo Zalman, if you're consistently Rosh Shlomo Zalman, a rotary is a great option altogether. And then going down in the hierarchy is the more gadgets and lights. Now, if you get LED type lights, which is probably the most common, let's say nowadays, especially in cell phones and things like that, that's also not bad. That's also only derabanan, as opposed to there are still touchtone phones that have a mamish light there. That's an incandescent light. That's the worst. That's the one to avoid. So really, going along those lines, the achrayus with gabe telephones is to just get that type of phone. Gramophone, ask your personal posseg or rav if he's like sees the advantage of the gramophone. When I, it certainly can't hurt, unless they break, which they seem to do and don't function well, then they could be annoying, and it could be a problem. So I don't know. I sometimes have difficulties with the gramophone. Again, it could be the bias. Is that way? You have to talk to a posseg to see if there's really an advantage to the gramotype derabbanan versus the derabbanans I was telling you about using a plain, non-lit, non-writing touchtone phone. Anyone have any questions about phones? There are a few more. In one of the handouts, we're going to just finish up now some of the situations with phones. If you look, the first handout is the one that has the Piskei Tshuvos on the cover. So on top, Shmuel Shabbos mentions a situation, one of the situations that we're going to confront, which is, let's say you're on call and you're home, and can you pick up the phone if it rings? Can you assume possibly someone's trying to call me? So obviously, the first response to this is common sense. Is it at all tenable that somebody with a medical issue is calling you? Right? So for most people, they do what actually Tzitz Eliezer recommends, which is make sure you have a special number that's your medical number and another number that's your private number. So obviously, if that's the setup you have, which many, many people do, if the medical number rings, so then you got reason to pause to think that possibly this is really a medical issue. So now I just want to see how much we've all internalized some of the previous issues. What will be koveya whether you pick up that phone or not? How would you analyze that based on things we've talked about? Right, I'll give you a hint. There's a major machlokas contemporary poskim exactly how to do this. Analyze it. What's the situation? What allows you to pick up that phone in your house when it's ringing? What potentially allows you to do any isser on Shabbos? All right, it's got to be pikuach nefesh. The only thing that could possibly allow you to pick up that phone if it's an isser d'oraisa, right, is a chalish yesh basar. Some type of pikuach nefesh. So, what type of pikuach nefesh situation could this be? The phone's ringing. So, is it a vada pikuach nefesh or a safek? Let's start with that. Safek, good. Is it a safek lefaneinu or eino lefaneinu? The sakana that we're talking about here. Remember that there's you always gotta ask yourself whenever you're dealing with any situation, A, is it sakana slefashos? B, is it vade or safek? And C, is it lefanai or not lefanai? Is it potential or is it actual? Right? Because generally speaking, we know the Bihuda, the Chasim Sofer, and all that discussion we once had, right? That when it's a Chol Shein on the Faneinu, the rules change, right?
But if the person's calling you because they're in a certain kind of situation, they need your, what's something you're going to tell them, then it's that would be the Faneinu.
Right, good. So this would be...
It all depends on the setup, like you said.
But the whole question is that who's calling me, right? So it's a Safek, and a Safek of, if it's going to be true, then it's a Safek that's... Lefaneinu. Good. So, what do we do with a suffix that's lefaneinu? Is it really a suffix lefaneinu? Let's say we're a suffix lefaneinu. Then what's the din? You know, this is less. This is more potential suffix lefaneinu. Right? This is one in Tzitz Eliezer of Shlomo Zalman territory. Right? That whole discussion is very important. They disagree on this, on what to do in this case. Does anyone remember the Mahalas? You should drum this into yourselves, because I'm telling you, this is just one little tiny example. That type of cheshbon you're making all the time. All the time, especially in your neighborhoods.
Right, so Shlomo Zalman would say, do what you do on a regular day.
Right. Shlomo Zalman is the Shomer Psaim Hashem, Kevin Dashri Rabin. Is this that type of sakana? Is this something that people, in general, consider a sakana that would get them to react? So that on Tuesday, you know, there'd be a certain urgency by answering the phone. Right? Whereas the Tzitz Eliezer was much more machmir about it. He said, no, when we're in this nebulous area, rov, you're back to rov, ken holchin achar rov in these type of situations. I follow Rosh Hashanah, right, on this type of thing for sure, and all these type of situations. So that for me, I continuously am running that cheshbon. I'm just telling you, on Shabbos, you're going to run that cheshbon through your mind. Is how would I react on Tuesday? That's the way you gotta think about it. How would I react? If you're reacting in any way with a certain sense of urgency that this could potentially be a sakana, you do the same thing on Shabbos. That will determine whether you pick up the phone. Okay. So that wasn't really what I brought this in here for, but I wanted it as a review. I want to reiterate that, but for the Bechina, right? Make sure that's on the Bechina. Okay, good. What I wanted to bring in is what he says. So he says, when you're picking it up, by the way, do it b'shino. So I wanted to just finalize what shino is when it comes to telephones. Because you're going to be, every time you're picking up a phone or doing any of these things, again, we want to do it b'shino, right? Do it the back of your hand, do something like that, or by two people. Two people doing it together. Right? If you look, I brought in Rav Nevinsol. Rav Nevinsol reiterates another point, which would be on the Bechina. Put this on the Bechina. Which is that Shino, when it comes to Shino, Klach HaYad, Rav Nevinsol emphasizes left and right, weak hand, it only makes a difference if it is going to make the action you're doing less nocha. Right? If it's harder to do, then it means something. But otherwise, no. So using the left and right hand by the phone means nothing. There's no shinoi involved in that, right? So what would be a shinoi? Again, using your, somehow doing it with your elbow, doing it with two hands like this, right? Like this. Those are all good shinoi. What about two people? So someone had once mentioned, do we really want to get another person involved when we don't have to? I agree with that. No one ever mentions it. I don't know why. I've never seen any of the poskim mention that point. They don't seem to be concerned. I think it's because the view is there needs to be chilul Shabbos here. There's a ceremony taking place. Everybody is involved, and everybody can do it. And they're not really concerned with bringing another person into it, even though it seems intuitively to make sense. But there's another major problem with the two people thing and why I would discourage it. Despite the fact that Shira Shabbos always mentions it, Nishma Sabah mentions it, but if you look at Piskei Tshuvos over here, he mentions, and the footnote 28 gives you the makaros for this, an idea that makes this very compelling to me, which is that Shnayim Sha'asahu Sha'asahu is a p'tur that is very pachos hamalacha. One of those two things. However, if the malacha is a malacha yachayev b'kolshel, or it's a malacha where you're chayev in the gemar malacha, right? Then you don't have that element. So, for example, the example they give is, let's say it's a malacha where zeh achar zeh, you'll still be chayev at the end, right? It shows you that the earlier person is really not doing anything or taking away from the act of the final person. That's the way these poskim felt picking up the phone would be. Right? Picking up the phone, two people is the same idea. It's a kol shehu, right? Making the connection. That's what you're doing. When you pick up a phone, you're being moly. You're doing moly. You're making that, or you're doing havara if there's lights. That type of thing is not, there's no p'tur of shleim shasa. Doesn't really work. Both people are chayiv. Both people are chayiv in that act of the malach. So in that sense, they discourage, you can't argue against this, by the way, it's not mukhra. You can still look at it much more in lomdus. Nevertheless, that Shnayim Sha'asahu is an independent tour that would get you off the hook. But there's a strong argument against it, so that's why, even though, and I've never done Shnayim Sha'asahu, if you see it in all the, by all the poskim, you might be tempted to do it. I think better not to. I think it's better to do a shinoi yourself than to do that.
But also, who are you asking? The second person?
There's someone else who's around. There's another chair. If you have a guy, you should probably have the guy do it all together.
No,
unless someone's going to get the wrong message. You know, you have to make that cheshbon yourself sometimes.
No, it's just the way that it's, I mean, you're right, the way that it's put in the Gemara, it's all that, you're drawing, it's, if you ask your child or your wife, if you're at home, to have fun with you, it's like you're drawing them into all these.
Right, so that absolutely makes sense. For some reason, they don't make that argument. I don't know why. I was thinking because there's, the mice, obviously if it's your child or something like that, there's a chinuch issue that overrides also. But let's say in the typical case where you're with other people, and it happens in shul, and faith, and this and that, and then you're together with a bunch of people, let's do shnayim shasahu. Better not to, right? When I was together, when I've been in these situations, I'm usually there with the rav of the shul, right? A couple of other balabatim, and we're making this decision. The rav like pushes it another way. He's teaching something that way, right? The gadol's doing it, etc. He does it pishino, and makes sense. It makes sense also for that other reason too. Why gets it?
Also, I want to ask, with the shino, you said, it's not a difference between your left hand and your right hand. Is that an objective thing, or it depends on the person? I just know for myself, like I do very little. I can do very little with my left hand. Like, just I broke it twice when I was younger, so Like, it really is much weaker.
Right, so I think with Batal Daita Tzilkol Adam, if you have a very specific individual issue,
right.
In terms of lefties and righties, that's generalized. Meaning, when we will be dealing with shinoi, like by writing, so a lefty b'shinoi will be what's mamish shinoi for him, a righty shinoi for him, right? And an ambidextrous person will have no shinoi available that way. But when it comes to something that's an individual, you know, weakness or something like that, then I think that you would have to still, I don't think you can consider it necessarily a shinoi for you, you know, so it's not much of a tircha. Page 2, just a quick statement here. These are going to be quick little additions. I went through Nishmas Avraham. I want to see what else does he add for contemporary times. It's a good thing about Nishmas Avraham, the latest edition of Nishmas Avraham, which I thank you all again for, that he adds a few things that are relevant to us. One is cell phones, right? Cell phones are going to be something that we might be using. And although you don't have to, it's rare that I've never used a cell phone on Shabbos. But someone who is in that situation, for whatever reason, so he tells you the shinuyim involved in cell phones. Let's say you have to flip open the case if you have one of those. So do it with. He tells you to do it with the back of your fingers, begatha etzba, and to be mishtamish in the buttons with the back of your etzba, and to make sure the thing that everyone always forgets is. And when you're closing things, do it b'shinuyim also. That I've forgotten in the beginning. I used to forget it all the time. When you hang up the phone, do it b'shinuyim also. Don't just. You know, you're not off the hook once the sakana is taken care of. If you're hanging up the phone, right? We talked about that. If, I didn't mention this, but let's say, for example, be careful when you go out to eat by friends. This is a personal saga. You go out to eat by friends on Shabbos and you're on call. Because if you get paged in your friend's house, right, you have absolutely no excuse to hang up the phone. You cannot hang up the phone, right? In your own house, you can make a cheshbon if it applies. Someone might call me on the phone. That has happened. If your beeper doesn't work, your service has your home phone number, they'll call you. But if you're in someone else's house, there's no rationale whatsoever for hanging up that phone. So, A, if you have to do it, make sure your friends have their phone off the hook.
This might be more of a technical point, but have that in shul where nobody's going to be receiving phone calls on the shul, I guess, phone. Doctor's use or whatever, but if you don't hang it up, then when another doctor or you or somebody may get a page, you might have to come down and then hang it up again and then pick it up again.
And it might be just a whole confusing state that will result
in more.
100%. Right, so I would think that in that situation, unless you've all gotten together, right, all the doctors that are potentially using that phone and made up some kind of system, and a phenomenon, and say that you could take that cheshbon when you're in the gym. As long as you know, you always gotta. There's a lot of thinking you gotta do with these things. That's the challenge to being a really Shabbos conscious doctor.
That's what's the concern. If someone's to come and put
well,
it on and take it off, if that's the kind of right there, then fine.
Right. In other words, if it's obvious, they just see, all right, hang up the phone. Right. If there's any possibility that there's a different extension or something like that, then it's a real problem. They're going to go somewhere else, and they're going to say, there's no dial, the phone's not working, and then it becomes...
Well, like, I don't know.
If there's only one phone...
Then he's going to have to hang it up.
Right. Yeah, you have to look at the mitzvahs.
He's going to have to pick it. It's going to be like...
You just have to be intellectually honest and look at the mitzvahs and assess it. Like, if there are multiple phones, I think for sure it's a problem not to hang it up. If there's a single phone, you're right, I would think that it just common sense would say, oh, here, it's off the hook, hang it up. The few seconds delay probably is not that simple. However, you've made the cheshbon that you don't need to be... in with them and on with them, you can trust whoever's on call, even the fellow, the resident, whoever it is, even. And however, you know that A, you're very concerned with your patient still. And you sort of intuitively know, and this I'm talking really personal experience, that even though you don't know exactly what the issue is at this moment, but you're staying abreast and knowing what's going on, and the potential input you can have is mamish going to make a difference with the patient, right? You come to that conclusion, so Rav Shlomo Zalman over here, or the Nishmas Avraham B'Shem of Newark actually, says you can call in. Right? This is a dilemma I have all the time. No one's calling me. You always say, don't call, right? This is the guiding rule usually is don't call unless they call you. Right? Then becomes a sakanas nefashos situation, and then you react to it. The one place where it gets a little nebulous is this type of situation where you feel that you're going to impact with this phone call. You're not just calling because you're curious. You're not just calling, you know, out of a heart-rending concern. But your mamash think that it can make a difference, then you should call. And you can call. That's his psak over here. He says, V'zos rak imeno somech ala rofe ha-toran, shiyazikenu im tisoreh ba'il kazu. He says, of course, you shouldn't call if you really trust the person who's on call, that should any type of issue that you could give input into happen, he'll definitely call you, so then don't call. Right? He says that. But the truth is, in reality, in real life, the other situation arises where you have the sense that, and again, you got to be intellectually honest and Hashem thinking again, that's where it comes in again, your mamish could make a difference. So I would say personally that that's okay. If you want to talk it over with your personal post, so you can see how they feel about that type of thing. To me, it's Davar Pashut. As long as you have the absolute criteria that you're going to make a difference. All right, let's just move it quickly through. The rest of this is a lot of pratim. On page 3 is the Rambam on Bona, the Malacha Bona. I just want to give you a little background on that, and I'll just summarize it very, very succinctly. Bona really involves, there are two types of Bona. There's Bona, based on the Krushim and the Mishkan, there's Bona that's making some type of ohel, some type of structure that has a roof and four walls and has kvias on the ground. That's one type of Bona. And then the other type of Bona that we see from the Krushim was taking things that are in parts and putting them together. Right? So even though there's Ein Binyan B'Kelim, right, in that whole sugya, so certainly the Rambam held that there is Binyan B'Kelim, and when it comes to assembling parts into sort of a final productive whole. That's one little bit of background. The other bit of background, you'll see why I'm doing this in a second, is what's not Bona is Derech Tashmisha. If you're doing something like, you have a house, right? So if you make a door and connect the door to the house, so that's Mosif Ala Binyan, right? That's where you're taking something that's already a Binyan, but you're adding functionality to it in a sort of permanent way by making a door. One of the places that comes into play is another problem that could come up. Let's say a person's on call, and you should not have any of you, but let's say you're on call for a three-day yantiv, right? Even in Eretz Yisrael, it can happen, the Mishnah Sefron points out, if you have Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos, whatever, three-day yantiv. So if you're dependent on batteries, let's say on a cell phone, you're going to need to recharge the battery. You're going to need to do something to make it work for the whole Shabbos. So what do? Can you recharge your battery on Shabbos? So number one, even though Rosh Hashanah was famous for plugging in a machine, plugging in an EKG machine, plugging in an echo machine, plugging in all those machines, Rosh Hashanah said that's not Bona at all. The Chazon Ish said it's Bona. He said, no, it's not Bona. That is sort of like Derech Tashmisha. You're taking a plug that's commonly goes in and out. It's always used that way, that you plug it into the wall and you take it out. That's not Binyan, that's pure Derech Tashmisha. However, when it came to a battery, putting a battery into any device, right, whether it be a light, an otoscope, a cell phone, or any type of device, that even Rav Shlomo Zalman, the most mekel in this area, says that's Bona. Right? What's the difference? So Rav Avram Sofer Avram, he came up with a svara, which Rav Shlomo Zalman's son confirmed, and he was Sameach, that it's different because, again, it involves the component parts. You're taking a guf acher, and you're connecting it, let's say, to the phone, right? If that's how you're charging up your phone. And that's mamish taking something that was mace and giving it, and you need to recharge it, right? So where does this happen? It happens, even if you're not going to use a cell phone, but it will happen with other instruments that you potentially are using. So what do? So he goes through a whole discussion, and he mentions, first of all, if it's only something that gets temporary life, it may not be Shalkayama, maybe it's only Durabanan anywhere. Right? So that's one tzad l'kul. And then he says, you could do it b'shinoi, and you'll also be okay. And then finally, he gives advice on the best way to handle this ahead of time. He says, use a Shabbos clock. Which means that if you're going to be in a situation where you're going to need to charge something up, and you know you will, he says, set up a Shabbos clock so that the charger is off. Right? At some point when you expect to need it. right? It's not connected to the outlet, right? Because the Shabbos clock has it on. So there's no problem. You put the phone in, then the clock clicks on, does it, then it clicks off again, and then you can take it out even. He says that's the ideal. If you can set up a Shabbos clock system, right? And this has a lot of creative application if you really get into these kind of things. Now, it's very hard to anticipate every little thing like this in reality, but it's an interesting Eitzah if you want to read it in more detail, so he goes through it over there. If you didn't do that, he says, get an Akum to do it. Al Yidei Nochri would be good to have them charge it up. Or if you can't do that, if that's not even Shayach, so do it Al Yidei Shinoi at the end of the day. But the bottom line is, he's matir it.
You just kind of need to connect it to your device.
That's what you're trying to avoid.
So that's still...
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Another problem we're not talking about is connecting
it. You're going to make it grumma. If you have a Shabbos clock there, then it's just grumma turning it on and charging, as opposed to you more directly doing it. Right. Truthfully, I've never done that. But I've never been in a situation where I had to worry that battery is going out. But it could. It definitely happens to people, and it could happen. And I'm mentioning it because most people in this kind of situation tend to take the easy way out and just ignore the possibility of an easier way to do it. So I figured it'd be nice to share an easier way.
Is that only if your battery is dead?
It's worse if your battery is dead. If your battery is not completely dead, it's arguably not boner. It's only if it's completely dead and then brought to life. So that's another cool that he mentions. If you could do it before your battery is dead, that's even better. That's the point you're making. Very good. Yes, it makes that point in the piece. All right. I want to push ahead because I really want to get past communications. On page 5, I brought down a very interesting kula that Shlomo Zalman and really Nishmas Avraham get into, which is Shlomo Zalman mentioned in Shmir Shabbos that on Yontif you might be able to be much more makil about telephones. Why? Normally we say everything we've talked about now is chol sheyesh basakam. What about a chol she'ein basakam? Very often you're dealing with more the rabbanim are going to be dealing with this. Families that come over with a kid who's got a little fever and all those things we talked about, whether they're sakana or not, oftentimes Baruch Hashem they're not sakana. They're chol she'ein basakana. The kid's got a little low grade fever and he's got a URI, he's got something, and we want to get to the doctor, we want to get to the pharmacy. Chol she'ein basakana. Who's brave enough to tell me what are you allowed to do for chol she'ein basakana? What's the general rule? Right? So, Amir al-Nachri, easy one. Right, absolutely. Amir al-Nachri is not. Now, all the Rabbanans are not all the Rabbanans? Right, so you say Xeris and Rabbanan? What did you say? Ah, so good. Both of you are right. Both of you are correct. In other words, you can do a Shvus Teshvus, for sure, like a Bishinoi. There are some that say you can even do Daraisa's Bishinoi. Remember those two? Right, there were two sheets, the Shulchan Aruch Harav and the Avnei Mezer, right, in Eglei Tal. They both mentioned this kula that you actually do the Shinoi for Chol she'ein basakana, even the Raisas. We don't really pass them like them, but what we saw, I'm sure when you do Chazar, you'll see this again, what we saw was that B'Shas HaDchak, under certain conditions, you can rely on them, right? But even Lechatchila, you can do B'Shinoi Eder Rabbanan, right, because it's considered like, you're both really saying the same thing. You could do gzeiros, right? That was Rav Shechter's whole big lomdos about. But for chol she'ein basakana, so malachas derabbanan are still aser, but gzeiros derabbanan are mutter, right? What about a telephone? So Rav Shlomo Zalman in Shmir Shabbos is coming from the perspective that telephones involve derises. So he says on Shabbos he certainly can't do it, but on Yontif, since Havara. On Yontif, there's a strong, these crystal writing, the writing is also done with the crystal. It's all Darabanan. So maybe even on Shabbos, you can use a phone for Chol she'ein basakana. That's what he suggests. Right? This you definitely got to talk to your individual poskim. Why? Because what exactly are the Isurim involved? What type of Darabanan is it? You will have a hard time pinning down exactly what Darabanans are involved in using a cell phone. Right? We know Hagisr, right, on all these things. We know Hagisr in electricity. We know Hagisr in maybe it's moly, and maybe it's not. There's so much discussion and confusion. You need a psak on this. But it is potentially possible that the psak will be that since it's only Durabanan, the phone, it's only Xer Durabanan. Maybe, you know, when you get into nebulous Durabanans, often those are only Xeros. Right? You just have to iron that out. And if that's so, then the you could possibly follow this Nishmas Avram's Kula, which is that even for Chalash Ein Basakana, it might be mutter to use the appropriate type of telephone. I'm mentioning that for your further investigation. I'm certainly not giving up sock on it. I would get one myself, talking it through. It's good lumdus if you get it to Hilchos Shabbos, and you want to start to get into the nitty-gritty about what these different Yisraelim are, and you can get to the bottom of that. Let's just quickly go to the other handout, which I'm going to move through fast. It's fax machines. And we'll go just a little over so I can end this. I want to get... we're going to do next week probably... I was going to do Ksiva, but I'm going to put off Ksiva for a moment. I'm going to do first... we're going to talk about IVs, blood drawing, and suturing, those type of things. We're going to get right into that. But for now, in this handout, fax machines. What's possible? I definitely use a fax machine more than I use a telephone, or at least the same amount. If I'm
to the labs, maybe.
Right. So labs, EKGs, absolutely. You know, it's definitely. You know, sometimes you have a patient who's got 100 labs or something. You're not going to have to sit over the phone and start hearing them. It's better to get it on a fax. We'll see why.
They send it to your house, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Certainly EKGs. If you're into cardiology, for sure you're going to deal with faxes. 100%. You're always getting EKGs. You're the people out there. This is a little medical muster. Just don't add EKGs anymore. Used to be every doctor could read EKG. Now only the cardiologist. But anyway, right. Maybe that's more true in pediatrics than in adult medicine. Coming back to halacha. What's wrong with the fax machine? Anything wrong with the fax machine?
No.
Let's just start with sending a fax.
If they're sending to you, you're answering.
Right. So what about you sending to them? Obviously, sending a fax has all the problems of using a telephone, whatever they may be, and maybe further, Ksiva, right? Even though it's Ayidei Grama, maybe not, we learned from Bava Kama Daf Samech, that whole thing about how it could be that just because there's steps in between, if the fax is produced temporarily, very quickly after you do whatever you do, that's still Ksiva, right? And that's a definite cheetah, that it could be Kosev Daraisa if you send the fax, right? Could be. There's arguments against it, doesn't matter, you don't want to get into it. So sending a fax is much worse. But what about just having a fax machine on? The first page has the sugya, right? The sugya of Shvisas Kelim, right? And Hashmas Kol, right? It's a famous sugya. We hold like Beis Hillel. There's no Isser of the Shvisas Kelim. We don't have to make sure that our Kelim don't work on Shabbos. Ourselves, yes. Our children, yes. Our behemoths, yes. Our Kelim, no. So, Mistama, so my fax machine's on. Big deal. It's my Kli, it's just doing its thing. What are the potential problems? So there's a whole discussion in the Gemara. There might be one, even according to Beis Hillel, who holds that there's no problem with Shvisas Kelim. However, there's an issue of Hashmas Kol. What's Hashmas Kol? Who knows? Anybody learned this sugya? What's Hashmas Kol?
Washing machines,
they say, or? Anything that makes noise, where, not just making noise, not that the noise is going to disturb you necessarily, right? You know, I guess that's part of it. But, right, exactly. What does it do if there's a device, an electrical device that's making noise? Option Milson, right? That it's going to send the message out there to people. It's like Meyer sign. This guy is Mechai, he put that on Shabbos, right? So that becomes one concern of the poskim that are going to deal with fax machines. You know, when it starts delivering the fax, right? And maybe in the old days it was making noise all the time. You read some of the older tshuvos and they seem to imply, anyone familiar with that? Did old fax machines make a noise all the time? I don't know. Mine doesn't. Mine's silent completely.
Now people, just like in general, with the internet, you know, they have more, you know, it's like Ethernet and stuff. But I think on the
it's
old
cleaner.
Ones, you hear like the, you know, the
some humming or something.
The when like the number comes in, like the noise of a dial, like a dial-up computer, the old modems.
When you make the call,
yeah,
even when
it comes in,
right.
It's like that.
But when it comes in, it's an issue. But it was a big issue for them, was Hashmas Kol, because the fax made a lot of noise, certainly when it was printed. You'll see how that comes out with mice. It does come out with some advice for us, even if ours doesn't make a lot of noise. You'll see it in a minute. The other issue was Lifnei Iver. That became an interesting discussion. They said, if you have your fax machine available to people on Shabbos, some guy's going to call you, wants to send you a fax, and perhaps it's Lifnei Iver, you're getting him to do something on Shabbos that he wouldn't have done without you facilitating it. So it's not Lifnei Iver Deraisa, without going into detail on that, but it could be Maseya Dvar there. So those are the two issues. So basically, at the bottom line, at the end of the day, I think they're more mekilim than machmirim on this issue. Even though there are machmirim that say you're not allowed to do it, It's certainly a mekilim, and for our purposes, pshita, right? In other words, if you need a fax as a doctor, that's a tzarech gadol, and that seemed to be a popular sadkula where they were saying after the whole discussion, these isurim are not so strong. The lifnei iver issue and the issue of hashmas kol, that as long as this is what you should do, and this is what really the bottom line practically for us is, if you have a fax machine, which you possibly will need, have it off in a private place. That's what they all seem to stress. Put it in a place where it's not subject to other people knowing about it, other people hearing about it, which is going to be the way you're going to feel about things anyway. You don't, you know, a person, it's bekoshi that we're mechallel Shabbos. That should be your feeling, and that should be the way you behave in terms of these inyanim. Just, I have all the chuvas in here. You can look at the give and take on nolad. If it's nolad, there's all discussion. Well, maybe we say we hold by nolad by yantiv, but not nolad by Shabbos. There are some people that are pasking l'chumra on yantiv, but l'kula on Shabbos actually by muksin nolad, right? And they make that type of chiluk. Rosh Hashanah doesn't seem to. He seems to hold that nolad is going to be a problem. But there's other reasons it could be muksa. If you have special fax paper, that's muksa machmas pisar and kiss. That's a real strong, heavy type of muksa. And it could be kagrogas tzmukim if you have it in your machine, even if it's not special paper, but this is designated fax paper, then you really set it aside for that. You set it aside for the bar iser, etc., etc. They build many different approaches to say that this thing's muksa. So at the end of the day, let's say it is muksa, right? Because it's got to be. You're not anticipating. Right? Even though you anticipate you might get a fax, you don't know I'm getting this given fax. At the end of the day, it's muksa. So what does that mean for you who needs this information, right? So obviously, whatever you need to do to read what you're getting, you do. But what you have to be mindful of is, A, if you could set it up in a way that you don't have to touch it, that's better, right? This goes back to the discussion we had in the very first year we had last year about what you're allowed to read and do on Shabbos. So if you look at the Mishnah Berurah and the Shulchan Aruch on that topic, he gets into the muksa element of things that you're not supposed to read, right? And that coming from chutz l'tchom and all that. The same eitzes apply here, meaning, if you could read it without touching it, that's best. Don't read it out loud. I don't know how many of you do that, if you can avoid it. Read it to yourself. And third, here's the one that's really practical, is don't carry it around. Just leave it. Drop it. Unless you need it for some medical purpose. So in other words, I have a whole little sheet in this handout dedicated to the inyan that I started with, which is part of all of this. Why are they so concerned with all these things which we seem to be looking for Yisurim almost? We're looking for the Rabbanis, right? They're very concerned with that concept of Shvisa, of Laman Yanuach, of the concept of the what the Rav called the thematic experience of value of Shabbos, the Kedusha of Shabbos. It's something that you really get a sense, and is the reason I loaded this handout with the Poskim's own statements, that Zilusa, the Shabbos, is a very significant concern. It's why Rav Moshe Feinstein outlawed Shabbos clocks, other than for lights, Bekoshi Hatiru, for lights even. He thought Shabbos clocks was a big Zilusa, the Shabbos. There's absolutely no Isser involved. What is it? It has nothing to do with the Dinim and Isserim of Shabbos. It has to do with the Kedusha of Shabbos. It's something that, even in the context of Sakanos and all the things we deal with, we should always be mindful of and pay careful attention.
When they, you see people do all the time, when they get a call, they get or they get a paid in shul, they're like, turn off like just like the beeping part of it. Why can't you do that?
Why can't you do that while it's happening?
Yeah.
Well, most beepers, you won't get the message until you press the button. To just turn off that noise for no reason, you cannot do. The other thing is, that reminds me, by the way, another eitzah that they all give about all these devices is whatever you could do ahead of time in terms of taking out the objectionable element of the device. So for example, phone, the ideal is people ask, when my beeper goes off, let's say, they'll ask me, so why don't I use the silent thing? So the problem with that, and I would, believe me, I hate, I sit there like nervous, my beeper's going off, I hate it. But you need something to wake you up in the middle of the night if you get paged, which happens all the time. And vibrating, you just can't count. You go to sleep wearing the beeper that vibrates, it'll be, you know, by your feet by the morning. It does you no good, and that's a big sakana. So there's just, if you can come up with a way out of it, you know, somehow have two beepers, right? That's always a great aid for a lot of reasons. You don't have to carry it, you don't have to get into all those moksa things. So if you have one at home that's, let's say, for nighttime that's on, and the one you have in shul is just a vibrator, that is probably the only option in terms of that. In other words, yeah.
So
noise is a big deal.
So you can't change it to vibrate in shul?
On Shabbos?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Because you're not doing it for kol nefesh, you're doing it to not disturb people.
In terms of Hashemah's call, so how did that apply to telephones in your house that you have, or just the regular house line?
In terms of...
would that be considered Hashemah's call if you're getting phone calls?
Right, so, I mean, it's an unusual circumstance, right? Normally, the only times that the phone should be ringing, right, is in the following two scenarios. One, you didn't answer your page, so they call you, right? So it's rare event. Two, it's if, let's say, you live in Eretz Yisrael and you're in a yeshuv, or you live in a from neighborhood and you're the doctor for the shkuna, any phone call you get is really going to be suspicious. You can definitely, if you turn off the volume, how are you going to know it's ringing?
You are,
right. So there's no option on that. But that is an example of Hashemah's call.
So for some
because Hashemah's call really means, the meaning of Hashemah's call is that it's an indicator that will make people suspicious you're doing a field Shabbos.
So, for example, somebody that's not a doctor and has no reason to believe they're going to, or let's say you're not on call.
Right, but I don't think you have to, I don't think you have to be concerned for the rare event you get a missed call that you have to turn off your phones every Shabbos.
So somebody else doesn't necessarily have to.
You run into trouble. It's a big tirchel. You end up forgetting you turned it off.
And when you also say in those cases that like everyone knows you don't cause the ringing.
Right, exactly, 100%. And that will, in that type of situation, it's not an issue. Right, some wanted to make that argument. In fact, Shlomo Zalman makes that argument about faxes. He said you could send a fax Erev Shabbos on a timer that will send it really on Shabbos, mamash. And he said you could even send it to a from Jew. Well, why not? Why are you allowed to do that? I mean, isn't that an issue of like Hashemah's call exactly? They're going to think you machal Shabbos. He says, no, everybody knows. People do this all the time. Everybody only knows that people. Time delayed, and no one would ever be choshe, right? That you would do it. It's really Hashemah's call. It's really for a place where the person would literally suspect that the other person would be choshe. Okay. So we'll have a very good week. The same stories. So we'll see you on Thursday night.